The Man Who Fell Through the Earth by Carolyn Wells. Chapter 1. Moving Shadow Shapes. One of the occasions when I experienced that grand and glorious feeling was when my law business had achieved proportions that justified my removal from my old office to new and more commodious quarters. I selected a somewhat pretentious building on Madison Avenue between 30th and 40th Street, and it was a red-letter day for me when I moved into my pleasant rooms on its top floor. The Puritan Trust Company occupied all of the ground floor, and there were also some private offices of that institution on the top floor, as well as a few offices to be let. My rooms were well located and delightfully light, and I furnished them with care, selecting chairs and desks of a dignified type and rugs of appropriate quiet coloring. I also selected my stenographer with care, and Nora McCormick was a red-haired piece of perfection. If she had a weakness, it was for reading detective stories, but I condoned that, for in my hammocky moods I, too, dipped into the tangled web school of fiction. And without undue conceit, I felt that I could give most specimens of the genus Sherlock cards and spades and beat them at their own game of deduction. I practiced it on Nora sometimes. She would bring me a veil or a glove of some friend of hers, and I would try to deduce the friend's traits of character. My successes and failures were about 50-50, but Nora thought I improved with practice, and anyway, it exercised my intelligence. I had failed to pass examination for the Army because of a defect, negligible, it seemed to me, in my eyesight. I was deeply disappointed, but as the law of compensation is usually in force, I unexpectedly proved to be of some use to my government after all. Across the hall from me was the private office of Amos Gately, the president of the Puritan Trust Company, and a man of city-wide reputation. I didn't know the great financier personally, but everyone knew of him, and his name was a synonym for all that is sound, honorable, and philanthropic in the money mart. He was of that frequently seen type, with the silver-gray hair that so becomingly accompanies deep, set dark eyes. And yet, I had never seen Mr. Gately himself. My knowledge of him was gained from his frequent portraiture in the papers or in an occasional magazine, and I had gathered in a vague way that he was a connoisseur of the fine arts, and that his offices, as well as his home, were palatial in their appointments. I may as well admit, therefore, that going in and out of my own rooms, I often looked toward his door, in hopes that I might get a glimpse, at least, of the treasures within. But so far I had not done so. To be sure, I had only occupied my own suite about a week, and then again, Mr. Gately was not always in his private offices during business hours. Doubtless, much of the time, he was down in the banking rooms. There was a yellow-haired stenographer who wore her hair in earmuffs, and who was, I should say, addicted to the vanity case. This young person, Nora had informed me, was Jenny Boyd. And that sums up the whole of my intimate knowledge of Amos Gately until the day of the black snow squall. I dare say my prehistoric ancestors were sun worshippers. At any rate, I am perfectly happy when the sun shines, and utterly miserable on a gloomy day. Of course, after sunset, I don't care. But days when artificial light must be used, I get fidgety and am positively unable to concentrate on any important line of thought. And so when Nora snapped on her green-shaded desk light in mid-afternoon, I impulsively jumped up to go home. I could stand electrically lighted rooms better in my diggings than in the work-compelling atmosphere of my office. "Finish that bit of work," I told my competent assistant, "and then go home yourself. I'm going now." "But it's only 3 o'clock, Mr. Bryce," and Nora's gray eyes looked up from the clicking keys. "I know it, but a snowstorm is brewing, and Lord knows there's snow enough."